Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Hello, hello. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. Thank you for coming back to join us on this Monday lunchtime. So, as you know, we always start the show with a news piece. And today's news is actually relatively connected to today's guest, which I won't give too much away at this moment in time. But on mygreenpod.com, which, as you know, is my wife and I ethical lifestyle media company that produces sustainability and ethical news every single day, come rain or shine. And we have been doing that for the last 15 odd years. So yesterday there was a piece of news that was featured in our International Women's Day magazine, which was out on March the 8th. I want to read this out to you because I think it's a really poignant piece of insight. I wouldn't necessarily say it's news because it's not current affairs, but it is news in the grand scheme of relative terms. So it's a piece written actually by Dr. Cilla Elworthy. And for those of you that don't know about Cilla, Dr. Cilla Elworthy is a three-time Nobel Peace Prize nominee for her work with Oxford Research Group to develop effective dialogue between nuclear weapons policymakers worldwide and their critics. Cilla founded Peace Direct in 2002 to fund, promote, and learn from local peace builders in conflict areas, was awarded the Nuano Peace Prize in 2003 and advised Peter Gabriel, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Sir Richard Branson in setting up the Elders, which is a group of supposedly wise people from around the world coming together to help make decisions. Her TED talk on nonviolence has been viewed by over 1.5 million people. And in 2017, Cilla founded the Business Plan for Peace to help prevent destructive conflict and build sustainable peace throughout the world. Because, as she says, it's possible. We all know it's possible. So with the current affairs, the geopolitics, the wars going on our planet right now, I thought this would be quite a poignant piece of news. The title is, and you can find this on mygreenpod.com, you can find it on the website and in our magazine, the International Women's Day magazine, very easy to find. The title is How Women Leaders Stop War. And this was published yesterday, March the 17th. Now, I'm going to read this out, so excuse me for it being a little long-winded, but definitely worth it. Most of humanity now stands with its mouth open, aghast at the endless repetition of terrifying violence we are witnessing. Some people assume that new and better methods of killing will render victory and that will solve the problem. It won't. Why? Because the cycle of violence will not have been interrupted. The cycle begins with an atrocity. The result is shock, followed by fear, followed by grief. Then comes anger. If nothing is done, anger becomes bitterness, demanding revenge and retaliation, resulting, of course, in another atrocity. Now, with this article, I'd like to show you how this cycle of violence can be broken, why women, and this is fundamentally important, must be included, how more women can be leading peace processes and what we can do now to support them. And I think we'd probably all be in agreement that there aren't enough women making major decisions when it comes to the kind of war and violence that is actually getting bigger and scaling at an unprecedented rate at the moment around the world. So she starts with peaceful negotiation. Now, Breaking the cycle of violence demands a different mentality and different skills, i.e., more women making decisions and perhaps less men. Not that this is an anti-men campaign, but I think we all know that a lot of these situations that we're in are male dominated and led. It requires courage and understanding. Representatives of opposing sides who refuse to talk must be approached separately by intermediaries they trust and who are able to liaise with each other. This is an extremely challenging process that requires deep courage, patience, and profound understanding. An initial first meeting should be secret and often with one or two representatives of either side who will usually state their demands and bottom lines. This is likely to be contentious and fractious, but if the process can be handled with care, it may begin to suggest some possible advantages for either side, and they may agree to send more senior people to a further meeting. Okay, the next round of talks must be guided by listening. Skilled mediators will insist that includes listening not only to the demands of each side, but also to their deeper needs. Tensions will arise. Compassionate communication must be used to defuse tension fast. Gradually, excuse me, after many meetings, it becomes possible to share accounts of what has been experienced by either side and for these accounts to be heard compassionately, so powerful feelings are less likely to feed the vicious cycle. These short examples do not begin to describe the immensely complex and demanding process of negotiation, but they suggest the advantages of female skills in conflict, preventing and resolution. So why include women? This is the key bit. This is the bit I wanted to get across. So since women are not usually instigators of cycles of violence, they start from a different place, bringing less charged emotional baggage with them. They can be freer to empathize with others whom men may see only as enemies. Women tend to use intuition to enable parties to understand what's needed in the moment. The male need for revenge is often triggered by shame and feelings of humiliation, including a failure to protect women whom they love. Revenge seems like the only way to alleviate these feelings and restore their sense of pride. Women can take a more long-term view and think more creatively about what might support a long-term peace. A balance of women in negotiating teams has been shown to help reach a peace deal that lasts longer. A statistical analysis of 182 signed peace agreements between 1989 and 2011 revealed that peace agreements where women are involved are 35% more likely to last for 15 years, which is amazing. The secret back channels, crucial in resolving conflicts, can most effectively be carried out by women. The ability to speak truth to power without provoking hostility or violence is invaluable. Now, this goes on, women in peace processes. So, in practice, how could more women be leading peace processes? First, we need to make known women's track records in preventing or resolving armed conflicts and the principles they used. Enabling people on the ground from dissident communities to meet, talk, and march together shows their leaders that they unite for and insist on a peaceful future. It goes on to say in Northern Ireland, where sectarian killings had escalated to crisis levels, Betty Williams and Mairead Maguire co-founded the Community for Peace People and mobilized over 10,000 Catholic and Protestant women to march and advocate for peace from 1974 to 1980, risking their lives to do so. They received the 1976 Nobel Peace Prize for their efforts to bring about an end to the hostilities. Now, the next bit says interfaith action. Another effective principle is to unite in an interfaith movement and prevent male negotiators from leaving talks until agreement is reached. In Liberia, after a 14-year civil war, Lema Gbawee united Christian and Muslim women in the interfaith movement, the Women of Liberia Mass Action for Peace. The women acted as intermediaries between Charles Taylor and rebel leaders and even carried out sex strikes to stop the men from fighting. So, I mean, that's really clear, the steps that they were taking. It says their efforts laid the foundations for Ellen Johnson Sirleaf to become the first female African head of state. In 2011, both Gbowee and Johnson Sirleaf were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, this article goes on, and I'm just going to share this last bit, and then you can read the rest yourself. It says, using networks. So, using female networks alongside the latest tech to map the spread of violence enables strategists to bring violence under control to prepare for a planned peace. In Kenya, when violence erupted after disputed elections in 2007, Dekka Ibrahim Abdi asked the 60,000 members of a women's organization to report what they saw on cell phones. The information pouring in enabled them to plot not only the hot spots of violence, but also the cold spots where people were running for protection. They then developed strategies for each spot with the help of trusted local leaders. In less than 3 weeks, these strategies brought the violence under control. So, as I said, this article does go on. I've read about half of it. I don't want to take up any more time because I'm sure if you're interested, you'll go to mygreenpod.com, have a look at that article, which was posted yesterday, March the 17th. But in essence, right now on our planet, we have wars and we have countries now being taken over by gang leaders. I mean, the state of the world today is, if you saw it in a film, you probably would think it was being, you wouldn't be able to believe it. But the fact is, we're seeing this in real time in the real world. So what actions can you take? What actions can you take to stand up against the bureaucracy and the leadership that is actually, in some ways, not doing everything that they can to stop this violence? And of course, my heart is set on the fact that we need more female leadership, more women in power, more women making decisions. Because as a man, I can absolutely identify that we have lived in a patriarchal society that's not only got us into conflict, it's also getting us into a massive issue when it comes to the climate crisis. Man-made decisions are creating man-made issues, which are creating perhaps the next big mass extinction, certainly for animals and wildlife, possibly for biodiversity, and most likely if we carry on for us as well. So what I've got today is a guest, a lady called Jess Rad. Now, she's a woman leader. She's, hugely respected in her field. She has an extraordinary background. I'm going to read you her bio actually, because it just made me smile when I read it. So I've got Jess here from The Womanhood, which is her organization, which is empowering women. But let me just very quickly share this with you. So before we introduce Jess, Jess began her career in film and TV as an award-winning marketeer for Disney, BBC, and the 20th Century Fox, working on brands like Ice Age, which my kids love, X-Men and Top Gear. I mean, they're probably three of the biggest movies out there that we recognize. And after having two children, Jess was running an animation studio and building a brand strategy consultancy when her period stopped. This health scare was the catalyst for change. And in 2019, Jess launched The Womanhood to support and connect women through the unspoken challenges of womanhood. Mindful of how often we were confusing digital interaction for human connection and having experienced the loneliness that she believes is the invisible pandemic imparting our health, she was determined to find a new way to bring women together to explore the challenges in impacting their daily quality of life and often long-term health. Jess Rad, welcome to Lean Into Clean. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Jarvis. I'm great. Thank you. Great to be here with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Could I ask you, Jess? Hearing your certainly a bit of your bio, what do you think is missing from there that you would actually say rather than it being written down? Like, what are the qualities can our audience and listeners hear about you that would show them who you are as a person?
Well, I strive to be what I want to see in the world, which is an unspoken woman. So I do my best to speak out about the true challenges that I face personally, and I see lots of women facing in the world today, to destigmatize them and normalize them, and to be proud, I suppose, in sharing who I am and the change I want to see in the world, in the hope that it shines a light for other people.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. I love that be the change you wish to see in the world, that Gandhian phrase. I try and live by that to the best of my ability as well. What are the challenges, Jess? So, you've gone from a, by the looks of things, a, kind of corporate, creative, high level career. I'm sure you were earning a small fortune for those kind of organizations, and you've gone into a kind of entrepreneurial, wanting to fix the world type space. What are the challenges in the space, first of all, in the what womanhood does?
For women, yeah, the chicken challenges. Oh, well, there's many. The ones that I tend to focus on are women's health. So there's lots that are not explored. Perimenopause is a brilliant example of how we've been going through that since the beginning of time, but only really been talking about it for the last 3 years. But there's many others that have been exposed, thankfully, a little bit by the Women's Health Strategy for England recently. Money is a big one. It's not a world that all women feel, I suppose, welcomed and comfortable and confident in. And there's still many gaps, gender-related gaps, in the field of money. Relationships. So with ourselves, that's not an easy one for many women for lots of reasons, with each other and with partners. And then what's the last one? Oh, neurodiversity is the other big one that I come to at the moment. So having recently recognized my own neurodivergence and being the proud parent and carer of my daughter who's autistic and dyspraxic, you obviously we're seeing this swathe of women getting late miss and undiagnosed and discovered in their kind of midlife. And I think that's an amazing area to shine a light on because I believe it's the pathway to freedom when we truly understand ourselves.
Nice, nice. Just to explain what neurodiversity is for those that are listening that might not fully understand what you mean by that.
Yeah, so it's the idea that we have lots of different brain types in the world, much akin to biodiversity, that we need diverse brains in the world in order for the world to kind of survive. But yeah, and seeing that as a positive. So we all have lots of strengths and weaknesses. And often, if you're neurodiverse, those are more slightly more extreme. But they're certainly a gift and important for the world to thrive.
Great. So it seems we're living in a pivotal moment in time where when neurodiversity is becoming labelled in all kinds of ways, or I guess label's not quite the correct term, recognised and then labelled. Whereas in the past, there were perhaps lots of things going on, but it wasn't we won't scientifically be able to prove or audit or monitor.
Absolutely. And particularly for women, because there's been this gender bias in research, lots of women have been missed because we've all been benchmarked against male characteristics. So.
Ah, yes, we'll get on to that in a minute. That's fascinating. I mean, even in the world that I'm in, which is trying to encourage, ethical consumption, if you like, people buying products that are least toxic, what we found is through the research that nearly every product, for very much up until quite recently, in terms of the last decade, was made from a male perspective, therefore targeted for male use. And actually, women are 90% the purchasers, so the system is just completely buggered to use a hopefully not too disruptive term. Jess, I want to come back to you on this. This is absolutely fascinating. I know I'm going to learn a lot about this. We do have to go to a commercial break, so those that are listening, do hang tight. We're going to be coming back to Jess and finding out more about her work and the impact it's having on the women that she's already started working with in her communities. Jess, we'll see you in a second. Don't run away.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Jarvis. This is Lean Into Clean. I'm here with Jess Rad. We're talking about the womanhood. Jess, when you came from a career that, clearly was very different to what you're doing now, what was the wake-up moment for you? Why did you jump off I don't know what we call it these days, the kind of rat race mentality into the purposeful, value-based, changing the world mentality. What was the turning point for you?
Well, it was very health related for me. So I had a 26-day menstrual cycle for some time, and suddenly, out of nowhere, in kind of June 2019, I went 45 days without a period. And that was, I didn't know the end date, of course. I was just going through, suddenly my body wasn't working properly, and it felt pretty terrifying, to be honest. And I had a very powerful conversation with my most spiritual friend at the time. Her name's Vanessa, and she said very calmly to me, "Well, it makes sense, Jess. You're in limbo with your work," because I knew that I wasn't on the path that I should be.
Yeah.
"And limbo in your marriage," because that wasn't going very well. "And now your body's in limbo." And I just thought, yeah, that makes total sense. It was like the universe had done everything it could to try and wake me up. I was so chronically stressed. I had this rash under my eyes for many months before then, and now my body wasn't working, and I just knew it was forcing change. So even though I didn't know what on earth I was going to do, I, with the support of my ex-husband, quit my job with nothing to go to, and out of that space. You know, they say you have to clear the weeds of the garden before new things can bloom. The womanhood was born. And my life has changed ever since.
Yeah, amazing. Well done. Well done. It is fascinating, and I know all of our listeners will relate to this, that when we are in a pivotal moment of change, if we don't listen to the intuitive nature, then eventually the body will go, okay, so you're not going to listening to the intellect or the emotions. Let's get into the physical. And so that's what's happened to you. So I think everybody can relate to that in one way, shape, or form. Thank you for sharing that. So the womanhood, what if you were to kind of, put it into a paragraph, what is it?
So it's a platform devoted to supporting and connecting women through the unspoken challenges of womanhood. I created a series of events called the Unspoken Sessions at the beginning, which walk women through the knowledge, mindset, and toolkit to make 1% changes. Because I often
Nice.
find that women are hit, in one place, and they know where they want to be, but the gulf between those two feel too big, and so we get overwhelmed by the possibility of change. And I love boiling it down to like the idea of just a 1% change. Let's make change feel really accessible. And I feel like there's a lot of systemic changes that need to happen in the world and in the UK. But I do believe, from a grassroots perspective, if I can help enable women to change their lives, that in turn has a ripple effect of changing the broader world.
Nice. So the unspoken sessions are what? Video content, podcast content?
They were in-person events that turned online as
Okay.
community events, and now they've been taken into businesses. So now I work with businesses. I realized that the kind of key barriers to women accessing the work were time and money. And I think employers are the gatekeepers of our most precious non-renewable resource, which is our time. And so if I can get it into a working day, then that's brilliant. So that's what's been happening over the last couple of years, I suppose, of bringing these kind of unspoken conversations, helping educate businesses about the realities of what's impacting women, to your point of women in leadership, women fulfilling their potential in the workplace. I think what's happening in our home lives, in our own bodies, in our own physiologies, in our minds, is directly impacted with how we're going to be able to show up at work and fulfill our career potential and ambitions. So it's really important to tie the two together and bring a greater awareness within women, certainly, but of course, all genders and all allies.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, we've got to have a focus. I mean, I think many of us want to try and fix everything, but you're right. You need to have that kind of, laser-like focus on a particular area and subject. I mean, clearly you're being recognized. I've got here that you've become an ambassador for the Send charity. I mean,
Amazing.
UN Women Delegate. For this year, which is amazing. I know Katie's been following that UN Women Delegacy over the last few years as well. So what are you what kind of feedback do you get from women? I mean, okay, so let's just take a typical scenario. You go into a, somebody's read about you, it's like, oh yeah, I think you'd be great to come in and speak to my team or my community or my organization, whatever. So what's a typical situation? You go in and how does it unfold? How do you get into the kind of the conversations and opening up and
Well, what often what I do, I suppose, is seek to normalize and destigmatize the challenges and then reframe them. So a couple of talks I do, one is reframing perimenopause as a gift in a woman's life. A lot of inevitably a lot of challenges with that. I was diagnosed with premature menopause age 38, so
So
that's what.
that's what that was what happened to you, was it? It was a
Yes.
premature,
Yeah.
because immediately when you said it, I thought, well, isn't that a natural kind of menopausal
Yeah.
situation? But yours just came early, so
Yeah, much earlier. So if the
yeah.
average age in the UK is 51, under 40 is premature menopause. So this is pre-Davina menopause revolution that we've been going through. So nobody was talking about it at that point. We had no idea what it was, and that was, yeah, certainly a driving force to not only speak openly about it, and at that point I was talking about it some years ago, destigmatize it, but also reframe it as a great opportunity, as a gift in a woman's life, because it does give you, perimenopause is the gradual decline of your sex hormones, estrogen being the major one, and that's our caring and nurturing hormone. So as we have less of that, we are biologically driven to actually refocus a bit on ourselves, which I think is absolutely what women need to do in order to fulfill on these other ambitions and dreams of ours. So I like to reframe what can definitely be very challenging times in women's lives as a positive. I just did a talk for Sussex University on International Women's Day about uncovering and celebrating autism and ADHD in women. So I discovered I'm definitely ADHD. I've got a lot of autistic traits back in last year, and it's pretty overwhelming, and there's definitely you enter into a grief cycle with this new awareness, because given it's coming so late in your life. But it's like the pathway to realize just your whole life suddenly making sense. And so I think if we were if we destigmatized autism in particular, there wouldn't be such a resistance to people actually getting these identifications, and then people's lives would make much more sense.
I'm a big believer. It's funny because I'm feeling what you're saying, and you can feel the truth in what you're saying, which is firstly wonderful to feel. And secondly, I don't believe you can teach anything unless you've had the experience of it. And I think, we've got a world right now where there's, all these kind of consultants that are trying to consult and offer advice. And I think if you haven't lived it, how can you even begin to offer advice to others? So, hats off to you for that. Really, I guess, really embodying or embracing or kind of walking the truth of your experience, because that's how we really learn from others, isn't it? So thank you for that. What In fact, I tell you what, let's play a song. Let's just break this down for a minute, because I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your personal life, if you don't mind. You've talked about, two children that are potentially within the space that you are working in. So clearly you've got a lot of first-hand experience. So we'll come to that in a moment. But I always ask my guests to choose two songs that are really soundtracks to their either A, the climate crisis, or soundtracks to the work that they do. So tell us what's the first song that you've chosen. Don't tell us why yet. I want to play it, everybody to hear it, and then you can tell me afterwards why you've chosen the song. So what's the song we're going to go with?
Yeah, the first song is called No Fear. It's a song that was, when I first did my events in person, I always wanted them to be multi-sensory events, and we had a playlist created for every session. And this was on one of those early sessions, but if I go back to it time and time again, as I have to encounter quite challenging times in my life, and yeah, try and embody that courage that's required to get through them.
And No Fear is by
I know, I can't remember. I haven't got it in front of
Shingai and Vassilis. I think I hope I pronounced that correct. If I haven't, I'm very sorry. This is No Fear. Oh, it's a bit of me, that song is, Jess. I love it. I never heard it, but instantly recognizable. Thank you. That's
Pleasure.
definitely going onto my playlist. So
Sorry, I didn't know the name.
it doesn't matter. The brilliant song, Shingai and
Perfect.
Vassilis or something. But anyway, why did what apart from the title and clearly the words, but how does it make you feel, that song? We know why you chose it, but how does it make you feel? What does it do to you?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because that's why I don't know the title. I realized I lyrics and artist names never register with me. I have no idea. But it's how a song makes me feel, and often if it wants to make me move, and that one makes me feel, I think, powerful and determined. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Definitely got me moving. I hope it did everybody else at home. Thank you for that. So let's get into. I always ask, if you don't mind, a couple of personal questions. So, you've got two children, boy and a girl, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you're very welcome to say as much or as little about, I'm not looking to pry at all, but what I'm more interested in is, the work that you're doing fundamentally. I mean, I speak to women just nearly every day in my business that are, appalled at the status quo of the world in terms of a lot of male decisions that are made, et cetera, et cetera. How do you deal with this with your kids? Like, what kind of conversations are you having with them? What are you trying to address as a wise person that understands, the kind of issues that they're growing up in? And if you want to talk about, some of the issues that might not be the norm, so to speak, I'm sorry if that's not very eloquently put, but this is your moment, really. Just how do you deal with it as a mum?
The challenges that I see facing women in the world with as a
Yeah, and
group.
you're more for your, more for your children, obviously. And
Yeah.
it's like, because it's not just for women in the world. It's like your son is going to grow up to hopefully have a, be around women, whether it's have a partner or not. So it's like, I don't know. It's just something about it. What? How do you deal with the kind of awkwardness of society today with your in relationship to your children?
Well, a couple of things. One, I think I'm very mindful of my language around both my kids. And by that I mean we automatically default to a lot of male language. And even like a road sign is a man, for example. So I often try to gender neutralize what we're talking about. And I love, so Lauren Curry is the founder of Upfront, and she's all about confidence. And she has this thing called the trick, which she's actually, I met her the other day for the first time at last, and she's written a children's book. The trick is basically the patriarchy, and it's a way of talking to children and really their parents about the patriarchal tricks that make boys and girls, men and women feel a certain way. And so I started to introduce that, particularly with my son, I suppose, to expose possible toxic masculinity, elements that he may encounter or the challenges that women and girls may face. I find I have to be a bit tricky. He's a very sensitive kid, actually, and I have to be mindful of not going too far, otherwise it feels too much for him. So I try, but so I think there's also an element of like recognizing my own need for patience, which it doesn't come overly naturally to me, but realize
It
not a
is said
process.
that our kids come to teach us, right?
Exactly. Gosh, mine teach me every day. I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you, thank you. And do you, I mean, being the conscious aware, perhaps hyper aware sometimes with the ADHD and the way that you respond and deal with things, does the, kind of the climate issue come into your awareness? Are you dealing with that? I mean, I know you're based in Brighton, which is very green community. We launched our business in Brighton. Do you have conversations with them about the climate crisis and stuff that's going on in the world? And
Yeah, with the kids, absolutely. And I think it feeds into their school a lot more now, thankfully, in their education. So, we'll be on the beach and picking up litter. My son is the eco warrior in his class and
oh,
is
nice.
mindful of it. So, yeah, I absolutely, it's part of our dialogue. I'm also always mindful of not overdoing it, because it's easy to fall into that. It feels a bit too catastrophic that everything feels quite
Yeah.
negative and to not, load anxiety on them. But yeah, absolutely. And I feel very grateful to be bringing them up in Brighton in such a conscious city as well.
Yeah, it's a very, very cool place. In fact, we're going down there for half term week after next, so I shall hopefully see you on the beach.
Yeah.
Jess, we're going to have to go to another commercial break. It's brilliant, obviously, for our, sponsors and partners. It's a shame for us, but we'll be back in a couple of minutes. I want to talk to you when we come back, about what you want to achieve, how you're going to achieve it, and what will the difference be in the world if you do achieve it. So, Jess, hold tight. We'll be back to you in a second.
The station that makes you feel good. Radio. UK Health Radio. The station. station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Jarvis Smith on Lean Into Clean on UK Health Radio. This is the show that helps you to live a less toxic lifestyle when it comes to, you know, the way that you choose to operate in the world. I'm here with Jess Rad, who's been talking about the womanhood. She talked about her personal, kind of relationship with her children and how she navigates through that. But I want to get into the business now, Jess. Like, you've got this, you know, clearly you're had a successful career in the past. Clearly you're striving for more success with the womanhood. What have you been able to achieve so far? And what have you noticed has been the impact on the communities that you've been working in? And is there any case studies that you can share on the level of, we appreciate there's some levels of sensitivity, but just overall?
Yeah, well, I've built a community of about 5,000 women, I suppose, across the world.
5,000?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
Yeah. And I strive to create conversations with talented women who are also on a mission to improve lives. So I often bring in experts in these different areas, women's health, money, neurodiversity and relationships, in order to bring the knowledge that I think lots of women are missing in our lives. And it's deliberate to go across lots of those as well, because I think there's a lot of unknown unknowns. You know, if you're seeking out to be wealthier and you're in that money space, you get served a lot of content like that. Mm. But you may not realize that you're suffering with endometriosis. You've got terrible, painful periods because you don't know to look for that, if that makes sense. So I love bringing this diverse range of information, content, always with a kind of positive reframe whilst acknowledging the challenges. And I suppose some of the impacts, and that's from a community side. So some of the impacts of that have been a lot of women share that they just feel so grateful for feeling less alone with these challenges. We used to have a government minister for loneliness, and it's, you know, it's a damaging to our health. It's smoking 15 cigarettes a day. I think it's the invisible pandemic that we've been going through, yeah. That we don't pay enough attention to, really. And I think we need to find more creative ways to bring people together. And people, yeah, have found out amazing things about themselves. They've realized that they're in perimenopause, and that's why they feel like they're, quote, going mad, or they've realized that they're neurodivergent and that nothing made sense before and now it does. And or maybe it's just they're just taking, I realized in lockdown that 1% of our day in 24 hours is just 15 minutes. So I often advocate, can you just give 15 minutes to yourself, 1% of your day dedicated to yourself, screen free? Because to your point, you made a point earlier about that intuition. I really advocate for us finding time for that space for introspection, because in our busy lives and dedicating so much of ourselves to others, we're really losing that. And I want to find ways to reconnect women to their own internal wisdom, because we often have all the answers within.
Nice. And okay, so what have you got lined up? What's kind of in the pipeline for you? Because, you know, have you got any speaking engagements or any projects that you're kind of like really kind of like, oh, this is going to be juicy. This is going to get my creative juices flowing.
Yeah, I did. The podcast is coming soon. So
great.
Unspoken Women Live series for some years now. I've interviewed dozens and dozens of women. Talented women exploring the unspoken challenges of womanhood today.
Yeah.
And I used to get stopped in the street when I was doing it in lockdown. People would say, oh my God, last night's was such a good one, Jess.
Like, oh, brilliant.
Wow. Okay. This is having impact. But right. it's limited on Instagram. So I want it to be more evergreen and more accessible to those that aren't on that platform. So I'll be doing, yeah, that's in the work. I've got an amazing producer helping me with that.
How will people find that? How do they get to you?
Well, if you follow me on Instagram, I think that's probably the best way. And then I'll be sharing it from there.
So your Instagram account is?
@thewomen, which is plural, _hood. So the women_hood.
The women_hood. Thank you.
And I've got more, exciting unspoken sessions being created for businesses at the moment. The latest is living in harmony with your cycle. And there's more, I think there's quite a lot of demand for the override your overwhelm, which is not too surprising. And yeah, lots of interest in exploring autism and ADHD. I think I've done about four talks on ADHD and autism in the last week. So yeah, it definitely is a space that people are interested in. And then I think I'll do a LinkedIn live series as well on neurodiversity with a friend. So
Oh, nice. There's lots coming up. It's interesting the ADHD thing, because I don't know if it's my male head, but whenever I hear ADHD, I rarely associate it with women,
yes,
which is, you know, everyone says, oh yeah, all men are on the spectrum. I hear that all the time from, you know, women around me, not my loved and dear ones, but kind of, you know, just kind of slightly separate but still around, and they're often moaning about their husbands, not necessarily about me. But I just, you know, it does always, it just makes me feel not very nice, because it's like, well, so tell me a bit more about women and ADHD, and you know, how common is it? How, you know,
Well,
what are the
just if I
signs? What do people need to look out for?
yeah, I mean, just a point on that note about everyone being on the spectrum, and it I think it's important to highlight that that's being said in a derogatory way at the moment, isn't it? That it
Is.
exists, and that's part of the problem. If we thought that being autistic was an amazing thing, then people would be proud to say I'm autistic rather than it being used as a kind of slur. And it's part of my mission in the world with a daughter who is autistic, and I haven't discovered if I am yet, but 50 to 70% of ADHDers will be autistic, or autistic people will be ADHD. It's a huge overlap of the two. I really want to rebrand these things so they don't feel so shrouded in shame, essentially. And that's the same. A lot of what I talk about is that's why I talk about destigmatizing them, because they feel inaccessible because we don't want to be associated with them. But there's something fundamentally wrong with that, and they have to be reframed. ADHD, yeah, we all have always thought of just naughty, white, hyperactive boys. It wasn't thought that girls could be ADHD. That's why we've been missed. Women have been, often misdiagnosed or not diagnosed. We're told that we have mental health issues, bipolar, anxiety, depression. It's really similar. I can see parallels with perimenopause. So many women, the first line of treatment was antidepressants. We didn't know that it was actually a hormone imbalance or reduction. So yeah, it feels like we've been done a great disservice, to be honest. The Women's Health Strategy for England was done in 2022. They surveyed 100,000 women across the UK, and the outcomes of that were showing that women's health is being it's not our needs are not being met on a daily basis. And Professor Dame Leslie Regan, who's the Women's Health Ambassador, and she was just reappointed in January, said very succinctly that the healthcare system has been built by and for men, with women as an afterthought. I think that's the reality of, and that's part of what drives me, is to change these things for women, to improve our daily quality of life, and often in turn our long-term health.
Amazing. What needs to happen then, do you think, on a massive macro scale? What if there were a couple of things that you think this would really nail it, what would they be?
Well, I think if we, to your, going back to the top of this show about women in leadership, to quote Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we need women in all the places that decisions are being made. We need a female lens at the top of science and medicine, research, technology, AI. We're seeing already that's just got a male lens on it, and it's the trickle-down effect is huge, and that's why we find ourselves where we are. I'm careful to not say that that's my sole purpose in life, because not every woman wants to get to that point, and that's fair enough. I think we should be looking for equity in our workplaces, but also in our home, and in society. But yeah, fundamentally, for really big change to happen, we need the female lens, and we need, and this is, I've learned this from you in our time together, we need unity. Often we talk about gender equity, and some men can roll their eyes, or they think they interpret the patriarchy as equaling men, and the two are not the same. But patriarchy is not men. It's a system that has been
Yes, it is.
built to certainly improve the lives of men. But if we recognize that we're all essentially made of the same stuff. And if we improve things for women and non-binary folk, and all genders, that absolutely will improve things for everybody.
Ah, amazing, amazing. I think that's a really beautiful and perfect moment to end on. I'm going to ask to your for your second track, but if it's all right with you, we'll have a closing, just a closing goodbye now. We'll play the song, and then our listeners can love you and leave you and just hear the song, because I think it's such a powerful record that you've chosen. Is there anything that you wish you'd have said that I haven't asked you, or anything we might have missed before we do that?
No, I suppose only that I hope maybe people can go away and do that 1% change. If women listen to this and they want to take something away from it, may it be 15 minutes to themselves for maybe some reflection or introspection, reconnection to themselves.
You heard it here, 1%. If you want to connect with Jess Red, go to the women underscore hood. So it's women rather than woman underscore hood, and you'll be able to connect with Jess. Please do. Jess, thank you so much. It's been really inspiring. I could speak to you for, a lot longer, but these shows just fly by. So just tell us the next song that you've chosen, and you
I
can tell
can't
me
remember
why
the name of it. I can't remember the names of songs. I know
It's
it's Donna
called, it,
Summer.
I'll tell you what it's called. It's called She Works Hard for the Money.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Thank you.
So this is Donna Summer, right? Classic, classic record. She Works Hard for the Money. Why did you choose it?
This was in my Money Confidence Unspoken session back in 2021. If I want one big change, my wish for this year is that women have more money and they're wealthier and we're financially empowered.
Yay, abundance of women and for everybody that's flying the feminine energy. Much love to you, Jess. Thank you. You are red, so you live up to your surname, and it's been great having you. This is Donna Summer. She works hard for the money.